On Open you will find three podcasts of interest to listeners who want to learn about digital youth participation. They are meant to be inspiring and feature interesting personalities from the youth sector sharing their stories, experiences, and best practices. This episode is about the future of digital participation. For years, digitalization has been advancing rapidly, and it is likely that the corona crisis has fueled this development. Digital media is creating new opportunities for participation and engagement, and many internet-based digital solutions for youth participation have been developed in recent years. This has the potential to revolutionize youth work, or maybe not. We talk to Juha Kiviniemi about the question, how he imagines the future of youth participation. What it might look like in, say, 20 years from now. We hope you enjoy listening to this podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digi Podcast series. In this episode, we will talk about an important topic, namely the future of e-participation. Our guest today is Juha Kiviniemi from the Finnish organization Verku.
Hello.
Hi, Juha. It's lovely to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Juha is here to share his insights from his years of experience in digital youth work. But before we delve into the topic of our conversation, my name is Eva Shepherd, and I'm part of the Digi project, which is funded by the European Union. Digi wants to make e-participation as easy as possible for people who want to conduct an e-participation project, especially on Open, a platform which is dedicated especially to online youth participation. Now that I've introduced myself and the Digi project, we can turn to the interesting and also complex topic of our conversation, the future of digital youth participation. Juha, could you first of all briefly introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us where you're from and where you work?
Sure. So I'm Juha Kiviniemi and I come from Finland. I work for an organization called Verke. And Verke is the organization that is coordinating the Center for Expertise on Digital Youth Work in Finland. So we have this very lovely system of different centers for expertise on different topics of youth work that can really focus on developing the youth field in particular topics. I've worked in the youth field for between 15 and 20 years. I've kind of lost count already at this point, and I've worked in Verke for about 5 years now. And during my career, I've always been kind of interested in combining digital technology and digital media with the youth work practice, because I'm just a huge nerd. I love tinkering with technology, and I love kind of combining that with how youth work is implemented.
That is lovely. And that is exactly nowadays what we need. We need more practitioners in the field, I have the feeling, who have exactly this interest. Now that you told us this, also from your specific background, I will ask you our first question, because I think it fits very well. What is your vision then for the future of digital youth participation in the next 20 years? What do you think?
That's a very easy question to answer. No, not really. I think the main thing that we are going to have to tackle is kind of this environment that is more fuzzy and maybe more out of our control. So instead of what we have done over the years a lot, we've built these participation systems for young people that are very accessible and very easy for young people to use and engage with. But we do find ourselves struggling with the fact that young people really maybe don't want to always engage with those platforms that we build for them. What we'll be probably moving into more and more is this kind of blended environment where we are simultaneously offering these, I will say, official channels of participation, because we are often required by law to provide them. But as youth field practitioners, youth workers, we will also be forced, and we will have to really support young people's own avenues of participation. So if a young person wants to, let's say, make an official initiative for the community that they are a part of, we should support them in that. What kind of language should they use, and what kind of systems do they need to be aware of to put their initiative in? What are the laws and what are the kind of realities affecting that? At the same time, another young person might want to affect the world around him or her by putting something on TikTok that is something unintelligible to us, but for that young person, it can be really a means to affect their surroundings and affect their communities. So we need to be more and more aware of that, and we need to be able to support that more. And of course, before we can support that more, we need to be able to identify it better, because I believe we don't always have the capacity to actually identify that, hey, that young person is actually trying to make his or her society better, but rather they're just doing something strange on TikTok, which I really don't get. And the platform will not be TikTok, it will be something else that we don't understand. I don't, even as a digital youth work expert, I don't really understand TikTok in the sense that I could ever make content on it. I kind of get it as a phenomenon, but I don't get how it is or why it is, or I guess I'm just too old for that.
Yeah, I've been having this feeling in the recent years that I've been working in digital youth participation too from time to time. But I would like to follow up after your very interesting explanations, where you have mentioned quite a few of aspects, on one that you said at the beginning, where you mentioned that it's a moving environment that you encounter, something that is developing quite quickly, and that there might be coming along some challenges, especially with this. Could you elaborate a little bit more on this?
Sure. I think one of the main challenges is that young people want to engage in the platforms that their peers are in. That's for sure. They don't want to come to a youth organization controlled platform to be there and interact with their peers there, but rather they will always go to the place where all their friends already are. And that's something we have to deal with. And when we go into that kind of an environment, which is more likely than not, it's a commercial environment, whether it's upheld by Meta or Google or some other actor, we have to abide by their rules and regulations and the dynamics of that platform. And it's out of our control. So I believe that instead of focusing on let's say, we would now focus 2 years and put a lot of European money into figuring out how we can support youth participation on TikTok. That doesn't make sense, because TikTok can be the last week thing in 6 months. And then we're left with a project that focuses on TikTok and young people are already leaving by droves. This already happened with Facebook back in the day. Rather, we should look at young people's digital cultures and cultures in plural, because there is not one digital culture. We should understand how young people use these platforms, how they engage with these platforms and with their peers, and how do they use those platforms, because often it's something other than what the original creators of the platforms have intended. And when we understand that, we can kind of apply the logics of youth participation into any platform that young people move into. So I would advocate for more of a generalized understanding of young people's usage habits and cultures within digital media platforms, and kind of taking the general ethos of youth participation, which that doesn't change so much. We do have the general principles of how we try to help young people be engage with societies better. So taking that logic into new platforms, I think, is key. Because, yeah, the platforms will always change very rapidly, and we can't really predict how that change will go. I always said that if I could predict what the next big thing is, I would be doing something else than youth work, and I would be a lot richer than doing youth work.
Yeah. I have two questions that I would like to ask you. Coming to what you just said, that the youth are on different platforms and they will probably go there where all their peers are. So this is, so to speak, the logic behind the selection of the digital tools that they use. Could you name us a few of the tools that you think at the moment are the ones that you encounter the most when you speak and work with the youth? So what are they using at the moment? And then the second question would be, if we then as a second step are supposed to not think about these specific tools too much, but rather to analyze their behavior in using these tools, or what they're aiming at, what their goals, or what the interaction way is that they like. Which logics did you find there, according to your experience? What do they actually do? What are they going for?
That's a very heavy question in the sense that it's very complicated, I would say. Some of the tools that a lot of kids use are currently, I mentioned TikTok already several times, but that also depends heavily on the age brackets. As you go to older teens, they tend to use TikTok and those kinds of tools less. Then again, people who are kind of into this kind of visual imagery, they tend to use Instagram a lot. It's huge how many young people use Instagram. And of course, the logic in these two platforms is very different. How kids engage with content on these platforms is very different than what kind of content is also provided within those platforms. And within the kind of logic of each platform, there are also trends, like what kind of images are more engaging to young people. That changes all the time on Instagram. TikTok trends are famous in the sense that the whole platform is kind of built on these trends, like a certain challenge or a certain dance that might come up, and that's the thing that you're doing. That can be leveraged into a participation thing as well, although sometimes it can be just kind of cringy when some official organization tries to make it like, let's do this and this to make it a participation thing. It can't really be forced, but if it happens, it can work really well. Same applies to YouTube, which is kind of more for longer content and longer pieces of information, of course, in video. And that's where a lot of the influencers are as well. So influencers as in people who young people follow for content that will influence what they think and how they act. I know in Finland, they've done some research on the fact that young people are actually, the content of influencers that they follow online actually affects what they speak of, how they think, what they speak of with their peers, both online and offline. And it also affects how they act in the real world. So for example, if they look at a lot of content that's geared towards like helping your community, that will often translate into them actually doing something beneficial for the community. So that can have a huge impact also on how young people act. And that's one of the reasons why also social media and these different platforms are super important for young people to kind of affect other young people's thinking and the way they act. So building those kind of communities is hugely important. What was actually the second part of your question? I think I missed that part.
I had the feeling, to be honest, that you were wonderfully weaving the two questions together in your answer. So I found that extremely insightful. Thank you very much. Yeah. As we've been talking a lot about what young people do when they use online tools, and also that the sphere is constantly developing. Now I would like to have a look on the offline world too a little bit and ask you, what do you think, which offline methods will continue to be relevant when working with young people together? What would you recommend for initiators of participation projects working with this target group to do?
I honestly don't think the method of how you engage young people, I don't think that even, or I don't personally feel that matters that much. I think the core will always be the topic, in the sense that you can't really, even if your method is super engaging, even if it's the best participation method, whether online or offline, If it's the best participation method ever, it will not be engaging for young people if the topic is something that they have no personal investment about. So it will always go topic first. If you can identify the topic which is relevant for those young people's lives that you are trying to reach, then whatever method you use will be good enough, I would say. Of course, the challenge is always kind of balancing that you get, let's say, deep enough results from that process while still maintaining a low threshold so that you can get different kinds of young people participating in the process. It's easy to fall into the trap of engaging those young people who have better competences already for engaging with a participation process, whether we are talking about digital competences in an online process or social competences in general and skills in general in an offline participation process. So maybe my answer to that would be the best method would be to identify the relevant kind of relevant topic, and then the next step would be actually to make sure that all the young people have the competences they need to actually participate on the same level. Then everything comes after that. And then I think the best method after that is the one that you're most excited about, because I think that transfers to the work as well.
Very important aspect too. Thank you very much for sharing these tips. I think they are incredibly helpful to our listeners. Perhaps putting it a little bit more into a concrete best practice example, if you perhaps have one, because in our project, in the Digi project, we continuously discuss about the key factors for successful digital youth participation, or for successful youth participation in general, because as you say, you can have a combination of different online and offline methods that may work out well. But what we still find if we talk about initiators of participation projects is that all of them are highly interested in tools that can be used for digital participation. So could you perhaps give us an example of an interesting and innovative tool for digital participation or for an successful project that was using one?
I will answer kind of from the side of the question, because my favorite example of digital youth participation is not from an initiator, it's not from a project at all. And I have actually no idea if it has been in any way supported by the youth field. But there is a young lady in Finland, a comic artist, makes little comics on Instagram. The handle is called Tympeät Tytöt, which means kind of these girls that are not really happy, that are kind of like awkward or kind of, I would say abrasive, maybe would be the translation. So girls who do not want to please others, basically. And the whole Instagram account is full of her wonderful comics that are addressing topics that girls and young women have to tackle in society. Like, for example, an art student has a man explaining to them how they actually know a lot more about a certain piece of art, for example. Or, for example, normalizing different topics or different things related to periods that girls have. All of these stuff are brought up in a wonderfully artistic way within this Instagram account. And it's definitely normalizing a lot of things that girls encounter in their day-to-day lives. And it's definitely raising a lot of important topics into discussion. They started fairly young. They're in their, I think, early 20s, I would say now. But the account has already existed for a while. I think that's a wonderful example of using what you're engaged with or what you're interested in this example, visual arts, creating art to really influence influence the community around you in your own way. I bring this up as an example because I think these sort of things are good examples of things that we as youth work practitioners, we don't necessarily recognize as youth participation. We don't identify it and we don't support it the way we should. We can support young people in creating art, and we do in a lot of projects, but we necessarily don't combine that with youth participation, or we don't see that as an avenue for youth participation.
Thank you very much for this. This is actually a very convincing example for why you should promote a little bit more grassroots initiatives, because many, and I completely agree with you, in many European countries, digital youth participation is still seen as a top-down approach, right? Which is, so to speak, conducted by the political sphere, by decision makers, by public bodies. And of course, this is also a legitimate way of approaching the issue.
It's a really nuanced topic in so many ways, the choice of platform.
It is indeed. Despite of all the differences between different participation projects and different kinds of initiators, let's put it that way, there is this current time that all of us is living in that is probably affecting them all. And this is the pandemic that has hit us all. How do you think does the pandemic influence the entire sphere?
I would say that the pandemic has definitely given a hands-on experience to a lot of practitioners that didn't have one yet. We saw in Finland that, I know Finland is seen as a very like developed country in a lot of aspects of digital youth work, and this is true. A lot of aspects are very developed. And the Finnish history is especially about online youth work. That's kind of the basis of what the digital youth work that has been done over the years. It's especially this online aspect. But despite of that, when the pandemic hit, what we saw in Verke a lot was that people were reaching out to us and saying, hey, I've actually never done anything like this before. So can you give me some pointers where to start from? And I can get that this happens with some practitioners who are just starting out in the field, but we really got this a lot. So what we've kind of seen is that even if the organizational experience is there, a lot of practitioners didn't have the personal experience of engaging with young people online. So this has definitely been one of the benefits of the pandemic, if you can say this, that a lot of practitioners have had to at least try engaging young people in digital platforms. Now it becomes a question, once we move out of the pandemic, it becomes a question of how do we capitalize on that experience. We saw in the first phase of the pandemic that a lot of online communities were being hastily put together, kind of as a band-aid for closures affecting youth houses. Like, what do we do now that we cannot physically meet young people in our youth house? So they put up communities, some without our help, some with our help. But once the first lockdowns were lifted, a lot of online communities were just dropped immediately without any kind of consideration. Okay, what did we just do? What did we achieve? What worked? What didn't? Some organizations did this very well. Don't get me wrong. Some organizations did this really well, that they evaluated how the online environment worked, what worked and what didn't, what kind of experiences practitioners had. Some even asked young people, what were your experiences in offering this and should we continue this in some way? Then when the second wave hit, some communities rebuilt super fast, like in a couple of days. Okay, our Discord server is up and running again because we had it in storage, so to speak, or they had it open already and they already had the practice. Some youth work organizations started from zero again because they had done no evaluation. They were like, I think it kind of worked like this, but we aren't sure what worked and what didn't. And moving that into a larger scale, of course, means that as a field, we should look at what has been good practice during the pandemic? How have we found new ways of engaging with young people? Have we reached young people that we haven't previously reached? I would say yes. And have we also not reached some young people that we were previously reaching in our activities, which is also definitely true. Some young people have been left behind during the pandemic, unfortunately. And applying all of this into youth participation as well, like how do we think about, okay, if we are able to engage young people in these and these ways in online environments, how do we actually implement that into online youth participation practice? Or how do we implement that kind of engagement in a hybrid or blended participation process where we use digital tools somehow to support this offline face-to-face youth participation? So it's about evaluation, it's about learning, identifying learning, and identifying also the gaps that we have, because definitely some of the things we have learned during the pandemic is about what we don't know.
That was a very inspiring answer, because it shows you that digital participation is first and foremost a learning process, that it's always evolving, and especially that there are always a multitude of changes for learning and for optimization, which is quite good, I think. Before we finish our conversation for today, I would like to ask you our last question. In general speaking, what do you think, if you would summarize your thoughts on the topic, will the future of youth participation look like in Europe and most of the European countries?
I am hoping, because I try to be an optimist by nature. I'm involved in processes on a European level where people are really looking hard at the effects of digitalization on young people's lives and the effects of digitalization in the youth field, us as practitioners, us as organizations, us as youth work field. All that work that has been done over the years and all that work that is being done right now and will be done in the future, I have to think that it will empower us as a field to better tackle these challenges of how to engage young people better. Whether it's using online tools, whether it's using digital technology in engaging young people better in face-to-face situations. And because so many central issues for young people have been identified across the board and still are being identified, I have to believe that that will translate into a better understanding of those issues and also better practice in the youth field in general. And I do believe that our understanding of how young people use digital technology has already grown so much that we will begin to understand better also how young people influence their own social spheres and their own communities. And once we start kind of understanding that better and evolving our practice to better respond to that, I think we're golden.
That's a wonderful ending. And with this, we have come to an end of our podcast episode on the future of youth participation. Thank you so much, Juha, for this very informative and inspiring conversation. I think it has shown that the youth participation of the future can be perceived as a bit more than just a policy-initiated process, right? It can also be seen as something that is carried by the many small and large initiatives of inspired individuals. And I think this is a very important and equally beautiful perspective. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast was brought to you by the Digi Project. Digi aims to make digital youth participation as easy as possible. On the platform open.me, we provide e-learning materials on a wide range of topics and questions that come up when you start a digital youth participation project. We are a European community of e-participation practitioners who regularly exchange on current developments and best practices. Join and contact us. On the open.me website, you can find our contact information, as well as more podcasts and videos on e-participation. My name is Eva Shepherd, and I wish you a good day.